weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Two Johnnies and Afric. It's Monday the 13th of May and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley will help us pick our sporting highlights from a weekend that had it all. If you'd like to share yours, please text us on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Man Remy Burns and Niall Moran will have more to say on all of that too. We'll also hear from GAA President Jarlett Burns and the GAA Go debate. But before we talk about seeing the weekend's drama, what about hearing how it sounded one more time?
That is some combination by Limerick. Now that is absolute class from Limerick.
Aidan O'Connor has that in the bank, so he does. A great player. Shea kicks it going through here now.
Shea kicks it through on the 13-metre line. He's pulled out. Now that has to be a
goal. Oh, it's a penalty.
That's a goal-scoring opportunity. That is a penalty. Oh, my God. What a chapter. What a story. What a game. We are watching one of the greatest games of all, of course, the game of hurling. But my God, penalty.
If you wrote away at the Santa Claus and you asked him for a game of hurling, this is what he would give you underneath the Christmas tree. This is everything and more, and I can't believe we're watching amateurs do this, because we said it before, Marky, and I'll let you take away the penalty out of this. We take this for granted, this amateur thing. But by Patrick, Jesus, it's unreal.
Patrick Horgan facing Nicky Quaid. Shot. Brilliant. Back in the net. Unstoppable! The crowd in Cork are gone stone, stark, raven mad. They're all up on their feet. The media guys beside me here are up on their feet.
He wants to stop it. McPartlin wants to score it. McPartlin, hands and hips, approaching the ball now with his left foot, saved by the keeper. The hero for Donegal is Sean Patton. The Donegal players race to embrace their goalkeeper. Jimmy's winning matches again. The Anglo Selkirk heading back to the hills of Donegal for the 11th time. High drama again in the Ulster final. A gigantic influx of spectators onto the pitch. It's more penalty shootout heartbreak for Armagh.
Game on 2FM.
It really was a magnificent weekend of sport. Alan Cawley and Austin O'Malley are with us in studio. It's hard to know even where to start because there was just greatness everywhere. Alan Cawley.
Absolutely, Maria. The boys in rip-roaring form there. That was absolutely brilliant. Marty, Shane and Park. And there was so much drama, as there tends to be most weekends, Marie. How we're able to clamour it all in over the course of a weekend, week after week. It's phenomenal what I suppose our sporting people produce week after week. But my highlight, I let you get into the GAA stuff, I'm going to stick to soccer on this one. And it goes right back to Friday evening, and it almost seems like a lifetime ago now, Friday evening, but young Mace Amelia, 16 years of age, put in an unbelievable performance for St Pat's against Shamrock Rovers, scored the equaliser, the second goal. And as I said, considering he's 16 years of age, there's a lot of talk about him. He's a bright future ahead of him. It was brilliant to see the performance that he put in. And now with all the talk of a potential new manager being the former Ireland manager and Stephen Kenny, there could be interesting times ahead at St Patrick's Athletic.
Yeah, and just while we're on the subject of young players, Sam Curtis made his Premier League debut as well at the weekend for Sheffield United. So to see a teenager, former St Pat's player, when he played in the cup final, right back coming on in the Premier League, you have to celebrate that, I think, as well.
Absolutely, Maria. He's had some trajectory, that young lad. And again, I suppose it tilts back towards the argument in terms of nowadays that lads have to stay here, they can't go away until they're 18, as we know. And he has established himself in the first team since he was 16.
He's played 60 games in men's football.
There you go, unbelievable. So the experience that will stand him in such good stead going forward. And obviously Chris Wilder, I know they're relegated, but I don't think that's a bad thing in terms of him and his career, that they'll obviously lose a few players. The fact that he was brought on the other day in a Premier League match, of course they have high hopes for him as well. And if he was to establish himself next season in the Championship at such a young age as well, it bodes well for Ireland, especially over the weekend when we heard news of Seamus Coleman also probably extending his contract. But we know Seamus's days are probably his best days might be behind him now in an Irish jersey. So for young Sam Curtis to emerge as a right full potential there, great news, and all to do with St Pat's as well, because their academy structure is really, really good.
If you're old enough, you're good enough. Simple as that. Austin O'Malley, what was your highlight of the weekend?
Yeah, look, again, it was just a mammoth weekend, and even listen to the guys at the hurling there, like there was so much in that. But I think for me, it certainly was the Ulster final, and I think just the penalty shootout at the end, when you think of, you know, what these amateur players had gone through, nearly 100 minutes of football, like it was a thunderous affair. And you know, the first 10 penalties like were just dispatched with such coolness, such composure and calmness, you know, when you can only think that guys were out on their feet, like, you know. And then you had the, I suppose, the agony and the ecstasy then at the end with Doherty's, you know, and young McPartlin missing, and the whole emotion afterwards, and even watching Jim McGuinness, you know, slip out a side gate and making his way to his mother in the stand for a hug, like. And, you know, I suppose Shane mentioned Santa Claus visit Páirc Cliath there, but Jimmy McGuinness is certainly the Donegal Santa Claus. He is their Santa Claus. He is.
Are you slagging grey hair, are you?
Would he, I ever know?
He's magic, McGuinness.
He is magic. And just, and like, even the interview afterwards, you know, where a lot of managers can be guarded and this platitude thrown, I just thought in terms of the emotion in his voice, and, you know, he really put together what it takes to do that, because it's such a, like, he's only in the job 4 months to get a group of guys together, and the run they've come through, arguably the toughest one, Ulster, you know, one that they've won. He's won four, but I just thought it was thunderous, and it was brilliant, and it was everything that's great about the GAA, I thought, you know.
It was incredible. I'd have said the first 11 penalties, but anyway, you're only given 10 credit. Marie, where would you go?
Before we move on, Al, were you a penalty taker?
I was.
Were you any good?
Of course he was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Brilliant, I'd say. Top brilliant.
Pins. I was good at the pens, yeah, I was, to be fair. Although I did miss, it's funny, like, we often talk about sport, you only remember the ones you missed. And it, despite having a decent record over the years, I remember missing one in a quarter final of the FEI Cup up in the Brandywell for Shells, and we won the league that year, and we could have went for a double, and honestly, it still haunts me to this day.
Did you hear Patrick Horgan after his penalty on Saturday night? He said he absolutely loves the pressure of it. He was shooting into the terrace, like, all the fans, the noise, like, the bigger the atmosphere, the more he enjoys it.
And that was an amazing pen he took.
Yeah.
Just the, I was saying to Austin as well, just before we came on air, I often found when I was younger and playing Gaelic, I found it was a harder penalty to take in Gaelic than it was in soccer. So the standard of those penalties from the Gaelic players yesterday was phenomenal.
That was incredible. I think just, and even the ball was wet, their greasy conditions and all that, but they were all so clean and through the strikes and bottom corner, and there was such composure, like, it is size 5 O'Neill's, you've got to get it, you know, you've
the
got
the way the game has gone now, Austin, with the penalty shootouts and obviously the season being condensed, would they practice penalties?
I think most teams that
definitely have, because they've been in many four
this
now.
Is their fourth, yeah, so most
they are.
Yeah, they're building it into training, definitely, and particularly when you know that it's going to, but yeah, and you can see it, the like, it has definitely improved over the last number of years. Where before, like, they say it's a lottery, but they're obviously they're drilling that training, and it's something that needs to be done now. It's bedded into most training sessions, I'd say.
It's such a hard thing, wasn't it, for Armagh to go out like that, though, Austin?
It is, yeah.
And penalties in a Gaelic football match again,
you know, and they done so much right during that game, and we'll come to it later, like, but again, just to, you know, to come down to the, it's wafer thin, the margins again, and there was a great shot, the camera pan to Kieran McGeaney during it, like, and he just, you could see him, his eyes closed, like, and he was just almost willing them, you know, to get across the line, because he's a decade obviously in situ, and, you know, he's done great things with them in terms of bringing them on and that, and they're just shy a bit of silverware, so, you know, you'd love to think that they would get across the line at some stage, you know, and they get their due rewards, but, you know, the game is, as I said, it's the margins are wafer thin, and it's a really, this one will sting, I would think.
Definitely. Ruby,
well, we'll get back to that in a second.
Yeah,
I did ask you, Marie, go on.
So mine is actually the Carlow Hurlers this weekend.
Brilliant.
Just super, love the underdog result. Story and the fact that I was here on Friday and talking to Owen Larkin, and, you know, I wasn't even going to ask him about it, really. Like, you know, I was there, look, you know, the big one, Cork and Limerick. And I did ask him about it, and I focused on Kilkenny. You know, I was like, what do Kilkenny need from this? And he said the win or whatever. But to see Carlow hold them to a draw, it just shows that all the work that a county like Carlow, for them to get, I know they didn't win, but to see them in that situation where they're going toe to toe with, like, arguably one of the best hurling counties around. I know they mightn't be up there with Limerick at the moment, but the tradition and everything that comes with Kilkenny, I just thought it was brilliant, and it was just, they were just deserved every bit of it, and great drama and excitement. And
is it fair to say, Marie, and with the GAA, obviously, but in both codes, but because of the standards maybe Dublin had set in recent times, and all the other counties obviously trying to close the gap, but even the so-called smaller counties have made marked improvements.
Huge.
Yeah. On and off the pitch, and you can see it even loud yesterday against Dublin. Phenomenal performance they put in as well. And I was saying here, like, to you on Friday night, that I didn't think it'd be anything like the scoreline that we'd seen previous. I was expecting it not to be maybe as tight as it was, but maybe 8 or 9 points. But I think all the smaller counties deserve massive credit, because they're all raising their standards.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so professional now in their setups, and even just off the pitch, they're building centres of excellence. And Ger Brennan was even calling for it afterwards, you know, looking for Louds. own situation to be moved on, and just in terms of their facilities. So like, it's every county knows now where they need to get to. Some of them are in a better position, the likes of Limerick and the benefactors they have. But for Carlow and for Louth this weekend, I know they didn't win, but
I think the likes of Limerick and the likes of Dublin, because they're so good and so their standards are so high, you have no choice but to be dragged along with it.
Exactly, Al, or you'll be left behind.
Well,
and they are, you can see those gaps.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm here.
Ruby's here as well. Sorry, Ruby. Just on your highlight, Ruby, before we move on again, because we've got a few texts in here about the penalties, and Ossie, just to go back to you, a few people think that they're brilliant and they add to the excitement, but some people think they don't belong in Gaelic football.
Yeah. And they're the old fogey traditionalists, don't mind them, Ruby.
Yeah.
come on, no, I heard a brilliant one. Before you give your opinion, Austin, I was listening to a podcast at RTE earlier. I'd say Wednesday night replay was the best suggestion I heard.
Ooh. Okay, yeah. Yeah, look, like, I mean, obviously you're back to the thing again at condensed squeeze calendars and they're trying to get through. It is a bit, yeah, like, it is a very, very tough way to go out. And, you know, I suppose there's such a sort of history and culture and legacy in Gaelic games that, you know, this is kind of a new thing that's been embedded in. Now, it has, I think, added to the sort of the tension and the drama and the excitement, but it is a very, very tough way for a team to go out on penalties, you know, particularly when there's been, as I said, nothing between them in the end there. So it is adding a little bit of value and excitement and all that, but I certainly can see how, you know, maybe some,
but it's
the
same in
the
soccer, because people say it's a tough way to lose, and it is. We, at some point, you have to end it somewhere.
So I just heard the lads talking about on the RTE podcast earlier, and I thought it was a good idea, Wednesday night replay, and obviously have a result on Wednesday night. But I think that'd be incredible, the FA Cup when United beat Palace, is that right, Alan?
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, that was
Wednesday night.
I actually think there's one for you. I actually think they played that on a Thursday night, I'm nearly sure.
And how would the lads get the days off work?
There was a suggestion was on the podcast as well. They'd have to be compensated by the GAA for their day off work. And Thursday night, you saw what the atmosphere was like on Saturday night in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Who knows? I don't know, Marie. And there's ways and means of doing most things.
Absolutely. There used to be replays, wasn't there? And they were great. Sure, the famous Dublin
game.
Four matches. Yeah. That was epic. Yeah,
but it's absolutely. Probably just because the amount of football they're playing now in the condensed season.
Yeah, that's it. They're trying to get two games, I think, and it's the calendar just isn't literally allowing them.
Sure, they're giving out about playing one game a week. Imagine they had to play again on the Wednesday.
Turnaround. My God. You'd
have put them all in it together.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll all be sitting at home going, why do our kids have no school today? Oh, the principal's playing a Gaelic football match this evening, so the school's closed down. It's all well and good till the realities of it.
That's one principal. Harry's closed the school down for one person. Like.
Well, you never know. Could be teachers. Could be a one principal school.
Bring all the kids to the match.
There you go.
Exactly. Look, see, Marie does a month. That's what she's trying to find a way to knock it down straight off. Simple as that.
I get what people are saying.
If they were professional athletes, absolutely throw them in on a Wednesday. But like, when you've got families and jobs and all these other commitments,
the recovery time in between.
And I think the penalties. I agree with that text. It has added plenty to it. Like, that was brilliant yesterday.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. Let's hear from our ma. Ruby, what was yours?
I had two, Marie. We had Pat Horgan on very early in lockdown, and of all the different people we had down, he was definitely the one person that I thought was going to struggle through lockdown. I mean, he was the saddest person I spoke to on the radio in lockdown. But to watch him at the weekend, and all sports people are dreamers, but you could almost see him when he stood up to take that penalty that he had done this before. He had kind of visioned this. He'd imagined it. 2 minutes to go, Limerick in front of the crowd. Just the way he took it, I thought it was magic to watch him. And my other sporting highlight was another amateur competing against professionals, and that was Lucy Latta at badminton, riding RCA patron saint. She finished second overall. It was an incredible performance. And look, we'll get on to GAA Go in a minute, but I had to download and pay for badminton TV for my kids to watch it.
I don't know, what is badminton?
Badminton is cross-country eventing. So it's the biggest event in Great Britain. It's 75 years old, 80 competitors, 34 of them either retired or eliminated in the cross country phase. And Lucy, who's an amateur competing against professionals like Tim Price, Pippa Funnel, William Fox Pitt, Bobby Upton, Caroline Powell, who won it, who's actually the high performance of the pony eventing team in Ireland. She's a New Zealander based in the UK. But to watch Lucy Latta do what she did on the cross country course in particular, she had 2 seconds. She was 2 seconds over the time, which is 0.4 penalties. But if you look at the next person behind her, William Fox Pitt, who is one of the greatest riders the world has ever seen in events, and like, he was 2.4 seconds over. Her performance on the cross country course was outstanding. She works as a production manager, a promotions manager for a product in Ireland. She only does this part time, but she's probably put herself into an Olympic position. Ireland having events and team qualified. That's and you'll imagine Lucy Latta will get onto it. And just to watch her in badminton on Saturday, to watch the size of the jumps, her judgment of pace, how she, like, I'm talking technical stuff, Marie, to watch her present her horse one fence after the next, tricky combinations, tiny arrowheads, off the sunken bridge, across the water. She was incredible to watch. And I'd say she was my sporting highlight, if I'm very honest.
I saw it great yesterday being highlighted all right, but I didn't realise the extent of the achievement. So geez, fair play to her.
Captain Eddie Boylan was the only Irish man to win it 59 years ago. Obviously Sarah Ennis was in the running overnight. She had a load of show jumping penalties yesterday. She finished 17th, but we have a lot of good professional riders here. But Lucy, as she called herself, is a hobby rider, and to get in the mix against people like Caroline Powell and William Fox Pitt is incredible.
Is there an opportunity now, Ruby, for her to go on and become professional, or a future in it for her?
There could be, but it's a very hard game, Alan. It's a game that revolves around sponsorship and trading, buying and selling horses. If you can't buy them, sell them to fund yourself, it is a tough life.
They're quite expensive. Sure,
we
well,
saw
Ruby.
A young Tommy Carson, didn't he, retire from the tennis? Well, it's so hard, like.
Anyway, Ruby, you downloaded that and paid for it and streamed it.
I did. No problem. And even managed, and one of the kids even managed to get it off the phone onto the television, Marie, which is even better again.
I'll have two for that, will you?
I don't talk to you. There was a couple of rows over that one, but anyway, we got it on the television. But no, look, it was. And that, I suppose, helps fund these things. And that's the route with the GAA go, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we may break away now from sporting highlights and have a listen to Gerald Byrne, the president of the GAA. He spoke to Claire Byrne about the GAA controversy about GAA Go that has been dominating headlines since probably about 5 minutes into that Cork Limerick game, when it was turning into an epic very quickly and people were struggling to find ways to watch it. So let's hear from Gerald Byrne speaking on Claire Byrne this morning.
Do we not expect and deserve that as supporters of the GAA, that we would see that game on the television free to air?
Yes, and for £176, you could have seen if they had bought the full package, which is €69, which is excellent value. Again, we would love if there were more of the broadcasting companies in Ireland.
But you've listening to this and have paid my TV licence. No, I expect to get that.
Yeah, and for your TV licence, you got 70 games free last year. Mm. And you will understand that your public service obligations will say that you cannot show all of the games. And the other thing is, we don't want to show all our games free to air, because that also promotes a sedentary lifestyle. We want people to be playing our games as much as possible. And that game was shown, and I'll go back to the original point. 11 Munster Hurling, RTE picked 7. There was 4 then that wouldn't been shown at all, of which that match on Saturday night was possibly one. GAA Go picked 2. And then there was nobody for the other two, and GAA Go picked the other two. So that's the reality of the climate that we find ourselves in whenever we go to renegotiate our broadcast rights.
But the bottom line seems to be, listening to you, that you want to put these big games on GAA Go because you want people to subscribe, because you need the money to reinvest in the GAA.
That is true. I'm not going to deny that. In order to make GAA Go financially viable, we can't just have the peripheral small games that we're not going to have on. So we do have to have some games to attract people to the €69, that they'll say, there's a couple of big games on, that will justify my purchase of €69. Because if we only put the big games on free to air, GAA Go then...
It's less attractive.
It's less attractive, and it won't pay for itself. And just what I would urge the government to reflect on the fact that this is a digital start-up, a young company that we are led to believe that the government is promoting, and now we have senior government ministers talking against the start-up of a young company that is there to fill a gap.
Charlotte Byrne speaking on Claire Byrne this morning. Austin, thoughts on GAA Go and this controversy?
Yeah, look, it's one that's going to, I think, it's going to rage on. It's just when you see, I suppose, what, you know, a lot of people missed out on Saturday evening, you know, it just draws this into a sharp focus. Like, for me personally, I think, like, is there not some wriggle room that, you know, they could, you know, you know, when it's closer to time to these games, that they could make a call on it. It obviously seems they're obviously locked in from way out. And that's the way it's ran. But I just think there should be some mechanism within the system where, at, you know, coming into, when you see, you know, these games coming into sort of a sharper focus, that you could say, well, no, we're going to, this one will be live to air on TV and that. And I think there needs to be something like that, rather than, because you are losing. Like, I mean, what people lost on Saturday evening, you know, households, where, like, one of the greatest games that was ever played in hurling, it just didn't make mainstream. And there's a lot of elderly people around there that are still struggling with streaming stuff and aren't au fait with technology and that, and it is a problem, I think, you know.
Alan?
Yeah, obviously I've listened to all the conversation about this, Marie, and I love the GAA and the hurling as well, and particularly, and I think the hurling has almost carried the GAA in the last 3, 4, 5 years when the football has been struggling, and you're only getting down to the nitty gritty of the All-Ireland semi-final or a final when the football's been good. But the hurling throughout the summer has been absolutely brilliant, in particular the Munster Championship. I know it's difficult for the broadcaster, and obviously we're involved, because we even mentioned at the top of the show in terms of trying to get all the sports that we all love on TV over a weekend, and I'm sure it's very, very difficult. I see it with League of Ireland football, rugby, horse racing, Gaelic. Where do you fit everything in? I know that can be difficult. But I'm a big fan of Jarlath Byrne since he came in. I think he's a brilliant communicator. He's very clear and concise in everything and how he speaks about it. I listened to him on a podcast recently, actually, and he was very, very good. And I love what he's trying to do in terms of going forward for the association. But I was disappointed with a couple of his comments today earlier, when he basically said to Clare, I'm making no bones about this, that it's about money and we're going to put the big games behind it to try and obviously make it financially viable. The GAA ethos was always inclusivity and community and amateur-based. And if you're not showcasing the unique brilliance of hurling on, and a game that we saw on Saturday night that many people didn't see, I think you're doing a disservice to the game and for young kids that maybe want to watch that, because it is so unique, hurling as a sport. It's fantastic.
I think there's two sides to the argument, though. I look at everything that my children do, and the best value is the GAA club membership. Our family membership in Lawrence's and Kildare is 160 quid for the year for the six of us. That's off the charts compared to what we have to pay for swimming, piano lessons. I'm not even going to go near ponies. But, like, I'm, it's just unbelievable the value that our kids get from our GAA club. So for me to have to put, say, an extra 2 or 3 quid to watch that one game, I don't see the issue. And I have good broadband as well, but I think I'm getting incredible value already out of the GAA.
I think you should earmark, like, we nearly know that the Munster Championship games are going to be very, very good at this stage. You know,
I think
you could nearly earmark them at the start of the season, say, well, we'll show at least 5, 6, 7 of them or whatever.
12 quid for an individual game on GAA Go, by the way.
12 quid. There you are. 12 quid.
And then it's 176 if you've paid for your whole yearly membership. So
right.
Sean has texted us in those.
Thank you, Sean. Very informative. At least you know what we're talking about now.
Did
12 quid for a game.
12 euros and paying the 69.
Drill into it.
Right, look, we'll leave it there, because as you say, Alan, it'll go on and on. I'd say it went on and on last year, it'll keep going on and on,
and maybe that's where they've fallen down a little bit this year, that it went on last year. Have they learned? We don't know. Why is it coming up again this year?
Was there any change?
Because that Limerick Cork game was just so epic.
Yeah, should have been the soundtrack in every sitting room in Ireland.
But then again, you look at it, what does it cost to put six, what do you need for a hurling game? Six cameras, probably more, seven.
I think it's quite truck. For that,
no doubt it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. It is.
And the logistics and trying to plan.
That's what people don't see as well. As I say, with the League of Ireland, we've had this. I've gone through numbers, figures, what it costs. It's a huge cost to go out to Tolka Park. Everyone at home thinks, oh, just show the games, no problem. Yeah. Well, they don't understand what actually goes into it.
And
as
then
well.
If it's
the infrastructure
not,
around it.
If it's not good quality, then people are giving out as well. So it's
the cost of a new park a truck, the cost of the satellite signal to get it out of there. Oh.
Okay, lads, we've got to take a break. We have gone on far too long about everything so far. We still have so much to get through. Raimi Burns is standing by to talk about Rory McIlroy's latest big win. Niall Moran's going to be chatting hurling with us. Austin has to go through all of the Gaelic football. And we have to do a bit of a Premier League, League of Ireland wrap with Alan as well. So we've a lot to squeeze in. Stay with us.
RTE 2FM. Game on.
Golf. For whatever reason, I'm able to go on at this golf course. You know, Quail Hollow, Charlotte in general has been really good to me over my career. And, you know, this is just another great day to, you know, to sort of add to all the rest of them.
I'm not sure a single fan has left here. They were chanting your name coming up 18. Can you just talk about the home field advantage that you have here in Charlotte?
Yeah, I feel like these people have sort of watched me grow up, you know, from winning here as a 20-year-old to, you know, being the ripe old age of 35 now. You know, they've sort of seen my progression throughout my career, and, you know, I've been lucky enough to win here 4 times. And yeah, the support that I get here is absolutely amazing. It's one of my favorite stops of the year, and can't wait to keep coming back and see how many I can get.
The last time you won a major was at the venue we head to next week. You had won the week before as well. Describe your confidence level right now and the way you're approaching the game, and physically how good your game feels.
Yeah, you know, I really got some confidence from New Orleans winning with Shane. And then, yeah, coming into this week, you know, at a golf course that I'm comfortable at, my golf swing feels a lot more comfortable than it has done. So going to a venue next week where I've won, it feels like the stars are aligning a little bit. But, you know, I've got a lot of golf to play, and a lot of great players to try to beat next week. But, you know, going into the next major of the year, feeling really good about myself.
Now, that was Rory McIlroy speaking after his magnificent win at Wells Fargo last night, and to talk us through how it went and what could happen for Rory next week. Raimi Burns, ex-European Tour pro, is with us now on the line. How much did you enjoy watching that last night, Raimi?
Yes, it was phenomenal. It's about time you want something big, you know, something like Dubai was good, but winning last night and winning in New Orleans a few weeks ago, it sort of kicked, you know, it's given the sort of bad part of the season when he hadn't been playing very well. And I think Shane relaxed him a little bit in New Orleans. His game's coming around, and he certainly took it to a different level in one of the hardest golf courses in America, in the PGA Tour. And it was phenomenal to, you know, pick up 8 shots on one golfer in 10 or 11 holes. But it certainly sets him up in as favourite for this week in Valhalla, a course that he's won around before.
Raimi, why can't he play like that all of the time?
Because he's human.
I think probably he's an East Coast player. He doesn't really putt great and play well, maybe in some of the tournaments in Los Angeles or in Pebble Beach, etc. And it takes him a little while for Rory to get sort of started in the PGA Tour. He's seen that a lot. Like, Scotty Scheffler's won a lot of tournaments up until April, and he hasn't won an awful lot after April. I think Rory needs sort of to go down, to get himself into the dumps, to work hard, to work on his golf swing. And I know he has had his fitness coach with him for the last few weeks. I know he's been working really hard, and I did notice that last week or last night in his golf swing, he's more stabilized, and he's just hitting the golf ball so far. He's like averaging 337 off the tee. He's staying really, really, really athletic through impact, and really athletic after he hits the golf ball. I mean, those are some of the tightest fairways in the world. There's a golf course that he really likes to play on. We all know he's won there before. And this is the time of year to play well. I know in the Masters was upsetting not winning, and it's not easy to go there all the time with the amount of hype and pressure he's on. But Rory has always been a sort of a May to September, May to October player. It's warmer, the ball's flying further, the fairways are firmer. You know, all those things in his golf swing, obviously, he's getting through the golf ball, I think, a lot better with his irons. He hit a few bad wedge shots the first few holes, but he's certainly fine-tuned his whole golf swing. And what a time of the year with 3 majors coming in consecutive months.
But, Raimi, you can talk about the fitness and the physique, but the back nine on the Sunday, it's also what's between your ears. 8, 9, 10, 13, 14, 15, he was incredible last night.
Well, number 7, you know, when he hit the ball left, Ruby, into the sort of the pine needles, he chipped up. Xander was just off the green. He played a good chip. Xander didn't play a great chip, but Rory held that 20-footer across the green into the hole. And, you know, if that had went the other way, it was 3 back. And that sort of given the kickstart. Then he birdies 8, 9, 10, great iron shot into 10. And then obviously we've seen what happened on the green mile. He just, you know, eagle and another birdie, and he flew past a really good player in form. Xander Schauffele, he was scrambling, best scrambler this week or last week. I mean, Rory was number 1 strokes gained, number 1 off the tee, number 1 fairways hit, number 2 in scrambling. But you could see it last night, though, as an athlete. You could see his temperament. He was walking slow, he was moving slow, he knew what he was at, he didn't panic, and as soon as he seen that green light, he just took that pole position and he just went. And that's the Rory that we know, and that's the Rory that people pay money to go see. I mean, the people love him everywhere he plays, but especially in Charlotte. And he fed off the crowd. And it's just a phenomenal achievement to win 26 PGA Tour events and maybe have a lot of seconds as well. You know, it's getting to the stage like 15, 16 years now in the PGA Tour to win that amount of tournaments. It's becoming legacy stuff.
It is a legacy. How does he get from the 18th green on Sunday to the first tee box on Thursday in the same mindset?
Well, look, Harry was already in the course, I think, this morning. He walked on the golf course in Valhalla, the course, a little soft. It's long. I think it's a little bit longer than Quail Hollow, but he's won round there before. He's going to the course. He's won round. He won two tournaments the last time before he plays. You know, he's in a good mindset, and Rory normally doesn't. When he gets into a good mindset, he normally doesn't stop for a very long time. And, you know, he's confident. You can see he's got that. It's not a cockiness, but it's just he's in control of his technique. And when Rory's in control of his technique, it's freewheeling. And his putter's very hot as well. He's putting really well. He's staying really solid through the putt. I noticed last night the putter head's really solid after impact. And I think, you know, unless someone goes out and beats his stats, and I can't see that happening with the way he's driving the golf ball off the tee. He's definitely has a phenomenal chance of picking up that fifth major. Like we all know, I think it's the 42nd major he's playing, and he hasn't won a major for the last 41 attempts. He's under a lot of pressure mentally, supposed to win another major, and that's what the greats are sort of. Their whole careers dictated around how many majors you win. You can win as many PGA Tour events you want, but it's time. I haven't seen a better time than right now for him to win coming this week.
Well, I hope you're right, Raimi Burns. Thanks so many for taking our call. We have a quick break to take.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Austin O'Malley is with us to reflect on what was a very good weekend of Gaelic football, particularly yesterday's Ulster final, Donegal claiming victory in a very dramatic game of football. I think we probably weren't expecting it to be as good because one, the hurling was so good and we didn't think we'd get such a great game. But heading into it, nobody really thought that a game of football would break out until late into the second half. But to be fair to the two teams, they delivered a lot more than we expected of them, I feel. Anyway, Osti?
Yeah, no, I think they did. And like that first half alone, when you look through it, I suppose the breakdown or the kind of the chronology of it, like going in at the break, like even some of the scores that were taken and the tackling, and it was just literally like the ebb and flow of it. It was thunderous at times, as I said at the outset, like, but the quality that was there, we weren't expecting. Most people thought it was going to be probably a bit of a stalemate and so on, but both of them came out and they really went for it. Like, and that first half alone, like in terms of, I think there was 24 shooting chances and 19 were taken, executed, which was a huge, huge number. And the quality of the scores, particularly from distance and out around sort of that arc. So it was of note, like, that a lot of teams are obviously setting up defensively now, but this has been, I suppose, a bit of a trend of late in terms of teams beginning to take better quality shots from outside 35 metres. And it's just something, like, obviously Donegal had some brilliant shooters in Gallen, Darragh Buil and these guys, and Niall O'Donnell that got off some amazing shots throughout, like. But the first half in particular was brilliant, and obviously then came, you know, the downpour of rain, and it made the next half a little bit trickier. But like, I suppose just the quality overall was brilliant. I suppose it was so tight, it was so tenacious. But just looking at it, like, I suppose in the balance of power, Armagh, like, had nosed ahead by 4 points on around the 50-51 minute. They were 15-11 up, you know, and there was a chance after that, Oisín Conaty, you know, Donegal got a small bit of a block on it, a ball down, and they obviously got up the field, and just the momentum swung a little bit. And I think looking at it, I was noting that there was Donegal got 6 frees after that particular in that juncture, and they just edged their way back into it, and Armagh just tightened up a little bit when you think about that. They didn't score from around the 15th minute right through, so they went about nearly 23 minutes without a score, and that ultimately cost them. Donegal reeled them back in, and then obviously it went into extra time, and like it ended 15-all, and then we had 20-20 after extra time. So it was just an epic encounter with the way it finished. And like, I suppose it's really, really tough on Armagh. They'd done so much right throughout in terms of the way they set up. They gave up their kick out, they got back, they were really compact. Turned Donegal over, I think on the stats it showed like they turned Donegal over around 19 times in their own area, you know, so they've done so much right, but yet, you know, they've come away with another you know, I suppose failed attempt at an Ulster title, but there was so much to be admired in it. There was so much to be admired in that game, and I thought, like, just, you know, Clonus, it's such an epic ground, the colour and the noise that was there, like, it was just, it was a brilliant spectacle.
Did Armagh's mindset change after 52, 3 minutes, 4 points up?
I think it did, Ruby. You could see, like, you're always looking sort of for signals from different players, and those two sort of moments that stood out, they won two marks inside the 45, which you would have thought, like, would have been, you know, they weren't the easiest, but I thought they should have taken them and put the ball dead. And I suppose with the way the game has gone now, if you put the ball dead, it allows you to set up and press up on the opposition and try and pilfer the kick out and put pressure on. And it's, I just think from a psychological perspective, it gives you more energy as well in that you're on the front foot. So from that perspective, I think definitely it did, and it showed, you know, they turned a bit of ball over as well, and those six frees that Donegal got as well, there was, you know, some of them were a little bit lazy tackling and so on, so they did look like they mentally tightened up a little bit and they weren't as free flowing as they had been up to that point.
I know it's only May, Osti, but one of our texters wants to know, will Donegal win the All-Ireland?
God, yeah, great question. Well, look, when you look through and you drill into the detail of what they have, they've so many parts of their game are in really, you know, they're in a really good place with it. And I suppose the chief ingredient that they seem to have is resilience, you know, in terms of, it's like sort of the baking soda in Jimmy's cake. That's the thing that brings them to the rise the whole time. Like, and it just seemed, they literally seem to hang in there and reel teams in. So this has been, you know, their third or fourth game where they've done that. So they have all the quality. Like, I even said it on this programme last year, even when they're at their lowest ebb, when you look through them, they have a lot of quality players. When you look at Kieran Thompson, Michael Langwin, you have McBrearty, Oisín Gallan, Ryan McHugh. These are all really, really talented guys, and they have a really, really solid keeper as well. So I think they have all the bits and pieces there to go really deep into a championship. I don't know if it's maybe a year too early, but you never know when you've got a guy like Jimmy McGuinness over them, like, they won't lack belief, particularly with what they've come through now. They've beaten Tyrone, they've beaten Derry, they've beaten Armagh, so yeah, and now their prize is to meet Tyrone again.
Yeah. So. What about Dublin though? We mentioned Louth and their brilliant performance, and a happy no doubt they will be at being able to go toe to toe with Dublin for such a long period of time, but what did we learn about Dublin after yesterday?
Well, nothing that we haven't known already. Like, it was still, even though Louth, like, I think Louth deserve huge credit and respect, and particularly Gerberne, in terms of the way they set them up. I thought it was really, really smart. They dropped everybody in, and there's, like, you know, you can drop numbers in behind the ball and Dublin can still break you down, but I thought they were so clever tactically in terms of the way they dropped their guys back, but their spacing was so good. They managed to get, like, double ups, and they really, you know, disrupted Dublin's attack for long stages there in the first half, and even into some of the second half as well, in terms of Dublin just weren't economical or as efficient. But still, I suppose, when, you know, the game or the sap rose there in the second half and they needed to turn it, they did. And I suppose no more so than Conor Callaghan in terms of, you know, his execution for the goal. And, you know, they had the liberty or the luxury to bring Jack McCaffrey in, who pinched and pilfered that kick out and just slipped Conn in, and next thing they were rolling. But I suppose throughout that, again, you're always looking for the big guys. Fintan's performance throughout, still, like, you know, even in the first half when they were rocking a little bit, he was standing up. But huge credit to Louth, and they had some notable performers as well in terms of Conor Grimes. I thought he was outstanding throughout, like 4 points from play, and really ran the show.
Okay, look, we're going to be talking Gaelic football again on Wednesday with Damian Lawler, but we're going to leave it for now, and we are going to talk hurling. Niall Moran joins us now on the line. Niall, have you done anything in the last day or so, bar think about how good that match was on Saturday night?
Intriguing contest. We took the back roads home out of Cork and Ian Reeve. That was the start. We were afraid. I mean, the Rebels were in full flow coming out of Cork, but it was just an epic. I know it's probably been touched on already, but the atmosphere on the way in, even the music the High Kings played before, it really set the tone. Free From Desire had a little rattle, and the game
like an ambush.
Didn't at this point.
Huh? They do like an ambush down there.
They wouldn't be their first time doing it, but I don't think this is the ambush that was being met out to be. To be fair to Cork, they really came well set up, and like, look, the form line coming into it was they had been very, very good against Clare. Like, obviously, when you score 3-24 and come out in the losing side, you have to take the positives out of it. And I suppose, look, they raised it up another notch. It was do or die. They had no other choice. They raised it up another notch. And I suppose, look, to be fair to someone like Patrick Collins deciding the goals, just to take credit, I suppose, these puckouts, especially in the first half, they were a huge reason why they were successful. And, you know, one thing that was evident from Saturday was the players really played for their management. And even it was interesting, as they were coming back out for the second half of the game, the management actually, they stood outside and applauded the players onto the pitch, when obviously sometimes we see the subs taking on that. And so that's a measure of respect for both parties towards each other. And I'm sure it wasn't last on some of the older players or the management that could have been Custer's last stand. But far from it now, the Rebels are alive and kicking, unfortunately.
They are alive and kicking. From a Limerick point of view, Niall, and I know you will be looking at it that way, what did you take out of it from Limerick?
I suppose, look, I was actually, to be honest, I was very positive in how Limerick played for a lot of it, especially in the second half. I really thought they, like, when you see them 8 points down, struggling for oxygen, all of a sudden, coming into the 67th minute, they were 4 points up. John, there's huge positives to be taken out of from a Limerick point of view, to be honest. The biggest negative that I would take going home from it is just the injuries. It's something that we touched on earlier in the year, but, like, it unhinged Kenny in 2010, obviously, the nature of some of their injuries, and Limerick are, like, they're battling that there the whole time at the moment. But I suppose, look, there were gaps there. It was actually very interesting, Ruby, that I was talking to one of the lads after the match, we were having a drink, and he was saying what was on television at 7:30 on Network 2 was, could Hitler have been stopped? And I suppose what he was saying is, it should have been, could Limerick have been stopped? And obviously the way Cork played with the long ball, it showed that obviously Limerick can be stopped in their tracks. But as the game wore on, I felt that Limerick did deal with it. They made a couple of positional switches, and I do think that they would have taken an awful lot of positives out of dealing with that going forward. So I would probably, besides the injuries, I would actually be very, very positive about Limerick, because they were going to get beaten in some game along the way. And look, they're forewarned to be forearmed. But again, the whole day was about Cork. Mm-hmm. And look, I've touched on it again about Seamus Harnedy, the respect I have for him, but I just think he set the tone really early days. He scored a goal and two from Clay, he set up a goal, he really went at Limerick's talisman. And I think the likes of Brian Hayes, John followed on suit. Obviously Darf Gibbon was brilliant. Just look, fair play to Cork, they're back in it, but they have to go again next Sunday.
They most certainly do, and we could talk about it all evening, but we can't go through hurling without talking about Carlow and Kilkenny. I mean, I'm not sure I ever thought I'd see the day where Carlow would draw with Kilkenny in a Leinster Championship game.
Yeah, well, I suppose who would have seen the day? But I suppose you have to look at it, like, Mount Leinster Rangers have had huge success there a couple of years ago in the Leinster Championship.
And so did Aer Óg in the football, but the footballers never got going.
they never got going, but, like, to be honest, Ruby, and again, sometimes it sounds condescending, but I haven't seen them in person. So I suppose my only experience of Carlow in person was we played them going back into the mid-90s inside in the league, and every time we used to play them, we used to get out of it by the skin of our teeth. And the obvious rhetoric at that time would be, Asher, you must have gone very bad in Carlow nearly beat you. But on the pitch, it was their ability to hurl, their ability to field, their ability to strike, albeit at times the pace in which they did things was quite slow. And I think what happened on Saturday was, okay, Kilkenny were in ascendancy, and obviously the sending off of Kenny and Doyle obviously had a huge impact. And Kilkenny will also allude to the fact that they hit 17 wides, but, like, they still have very, really, really good hurlers. And, like, the guy who scored the equaliser there, Marty Cavanagh, he's around an awful long time. And it's not his first time equalising a big game. I know they drew a call a few years ago in the National League. He did the very same thing. Do you know what I mean? So, like, do you know what it does? If nothing else, it just copper fastens that this championship format, albeit the timing is wrong, the format is as good as what you can have for the promotion of hurling. And I really, like, when you see last year we saw Westmeath turn over Wexford. Obviously, Antrim have turned over Wexford already this year. Now Carlow pushed Kilkenny. So I suppose in the bigger picture, it's a major step forward for GAA in terms of the health of the game. And look, for Carlow, they're obviously going to Wexford as well next week. And so they might might be viewing that as a game that they might win, which will be another intriguing contest.
Yeah, it really will. And there's so many of them next weekend. We can't wait, and we'll chat to you again next Monday about all the weekend's action. Alan Cawley is waiting very patiently, and I'm not sure if he wants to talk about Arsenal, Man City, or the state of Old Trafford. Which is it, Al?
Where do you begin?
The state of Old Trafford. It was actually sad to see yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It really was.
Embarrassing.
That didn't see it. There was a biblical shower, but it came through every nook and cranny of all the stands, and the whole place looked like it was covered in waterfalls, just leaks everywhere, and it just was a metaphor, a lot of people were saying, for where Man United are at right now.
Sinking ship.
Yeah, 100%. And I suppose when you think of people and the money they're paying for tickets for matches as well, Marie, like, it was appalling, really. But it just heightens and focuses, I suppose. Not only are the problems on the pitch, but there's major problems off the pitch as well. And now with the new ownership, Jim Ratcliffe is obviously fully aware of all this. And you look at the team as well, and it was just... Arsenal, I know it might look tied in terms of it was only 1-0, but I felt they were always at arm's length, Manchester United, when Arsenal just were in so, even out of possession, they were in so much control. And they got the job done, to be fair to Arsenal. Everybody said last year that they bottled it a little bit. I didn't think that. This year, I think that point is emphasised even more because of the form that they're on. But the big thing, and I've been saying it for the last how many number of weeks, I said it here Friday as well, Marie, I'm nearly hoping for a twist, but I'm running out of road. I've only two more games left for this twist, and obviously that's tomorrow and Saturday. And when you think of Man City's form in their last seven wins, and this is supposed to be like squeaky bum time, their last seven wins, six out of those seven matches they've scored four or more. Like, it's phenomenal. They're dismantling teams. And as I said, this is supposed to be the nervy time, and you think, oh, will they creak under the pressure? Sure, they love it. They're relishing it, like, you know. But tomorrow, I still maintain there may be some sort of a twist. And there only has to be a draw as well. So I think Spurs, to be fair, I was listening to some of the comments from Postecoglou today. Yeah. And of course, because of the rivalry, people were suggesting that Spurs don't want to see Arsenal win the league. He came out and reinforced the idea that we're here as a football team. He says, I've never heard of anybody not wanting their own team to win. And he said, it's certainly not my mantra. And they're going all out to put in a performance. So we'll see can they deliver.
Liverpool, Aston Villa tonight, Al.
Yeah, I think it's in Villa's hands, but they've been struggling in recent weeks. I think they've just, the amount of games they've played as well, Ruby, with Europe as well, but I think they'll get the job done. Again, I suppose for Arsenal fans looking at the game at the weekend, they will be hoping if Villa lose, that opens the door for Spurs to put in an even bigger performance tomorrow, because they'll still feel as though they have a chance at top four. But who knows? But it's all about tomorrow, really, Ruby. And as I said, I think Spurs, they've been brilliant all season. The wheels have come off a little bit towards the end, but they're capable of putting in a big performance, and hopefully they do tomorrow.
OK, well, Shane and Ruby will be on tomorrow to preview that huge game. Stephen Kelly will also be along, and Mark Langdon, we're tuning in for that. Thank you, everybody, for coming in and joining us and sharing all those sporting highlights and getting through so much of the weekend's action. I'm not back until Thursday, but Ruby will guide you through tomorrow. Betty De Silva's up next. RTE 2FM.